Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Yesterday, President Trump laid out the framework for what would be the biggest overhaul of the American tax system in decades. He's selling it as a middle-class miracle. That's up for debate. So are its likely effects on the deficit, the economy, and the balance of who pays what in this country. This hour on Point, we're looking again at the GOP tax plan. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on what's your first impression and how will you judge whether to support or oppose. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Here was the president at the White House on Tuesday in a meeting with lawmakers of both parties, speaking about the GOP tax plan one day ahead of the framework's release.
The jobs will start pouring in from all over the world, coming back to our country. They've left our country, so many of the jobs, and they'll be coming back in because we have a non-competitive tax structure right now, and we're going to go super competitive.
Super competitive and middle-class miracle, he said in his big speech in Indianapolis yesterday.
Democrats and Republicans in Congress should come together, finally, to deliver this giant win for the American people and begin middle-class miracle. It's called a middle-class miracle once again.
Giant win, middle-class miracle. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, not so sure. Who wins what here? Here he was expressing disappointment. Well, you'll hear him.
They raised the bottom rate from 10 to 12%, the lowest rate on the poorest and working-class Americans. So what the plan does is the top rate on the wealthiest comes down, and the bottom rate on working class families goes up. What kind of plan is this?
All right, let's dive in. Be brave. Joining me first today from New York is Ben White, chief economic correspondent and author of the Morning Money column for Politico. Ben White, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
Can we tell what the bottom line here is yet? Some framework has been painted here. Lots of details not yet filled in. Can we tell how and whether this shifts the burden of American taxation overall from the wealthier to the middle to the lower? What's it look like, Ben? Do we know?
We don't know. Partly we don't know because they released these tax brackets for the individual side of the income tax ledger without telling us what incomes they would apply to. So we know that they want a 35% rate, a 25% rate, and a 12% rate, but we don't know who would pay that. So it's hard to calculate for anyone how their tax bill would change under this. We do know it would lower the rate for corporations by quite a lot, 35 to 20, and for pass-through businesses, 25 down to 20, so they'll benefit a lot. It's hard to see. It's not obvious that there is a middle-class miracle in here, that if there is going to be middle-class tax relief, it's going to be pretty small. We're talking, a few hundred dollars to $1,000 per year, which is not exactly a miracle. And you certainly see the wealthy pay less if they go from a 39.6% to a 35% rate. They have said that they're open to a fourth rate, a top rate for the highest earners to make it less skewed to the wealthy. But right now, you can talk about a middle-class miracle, but I don't see it in these details.
Of course, the middle-class miracle, I guess the president is talking about creating an economic miracle out of here that would spill over for a middle-class miracle. We'll look more at that. But he said yesterday as he walked to Marine One, the helicopter, presidential helicopter there, he was asked him if his tax plan was a boon to the wealthiest Americans like him. Here's what the president had to say.
No, I don't benefit. I don't benefit. In fact, very, very strongly, as you see, I think there's very little benefit for people of wealth.
Ben White, fact check for us here. From what we do know, very little benefit in this plan for people of wealth.
It's just not true, and it's not true for Trump himself either, based on what we know, which is limited by the fact that we don't have his full tax returns. I believe we have partial from 2005. What we do know is that he owns and runs a number of private corporations that would be taxed under the pass-through rate, whereby the business owner pays his business income on the personal side. And so that tax rate would go down from the top 39.6 to 25, so that would benefit Trump. We also know that the top rate for individuals would go down. That would benefit the wealthy. So both for Trump himself and for wealthy taxpayers, this would be a benefit. Also, Trump at one point was hit by the alternative minimum tax, which is intended to make sure the wealthy pay at least some in taxes, and this would get rid of that as well as the inheritance tax. So there's just, frankly, a lot of benefits for wealthy people in here, and to say there isn't is not accurate.
Can we stick with those last two for a second? The alternative minimum tax, that hits quite a few people in the top, I don't know what, 10%, 20% of earners in this country. That would go away under this plan?
It would go away under this plan. And, you know, there are some defenders of getting rid of it that it doesn't serve the purpose that it once did, because it also hits some folks who are not in that top echelon, and it's not fair for them. But there'd be ways to tweak that and fix that so it just applies to top earners who can take a lot of deductions and wind up with a low tax rate. You could still apply an AMT to them. But if you take away the AMT and the inheritance tax, which only kicks in over $11 million, you're talking about some pretty rich people. The idea that the inheritance tax just applies to small farmers and small businessmen, that myth persists, but it's just not accurate.
Inheritance tax, outline what that would be for us here. Presumably, the Trump family and other of the quite wealthy families in this country, they have a lot to pass along. You can have a kind of an inherited tax, a whole part of the population that just has money pour from one generation to the next.
Right.
What's the plan here? No tax up to $11 million, and then
That's what it is. That's what it is now, Tom.
Okay.
You can pass along wealth up to $11 million without hitting the inheritance tax.
Okay, I wouldn't know, but okay.
Yeah. Me neither. Believe me. But above that, you pay an inheritance tax.
Yeah.
Republicans have hated this for all time because to them it's double taxation. That this money has been accrued and earned and saved, and it was taxed along that process the normal way, and that the government then comes and takes another whack at it again when you die and you pass it on to relatives.
We've got the philosophy. Of course, on the other side of that is the country's not wanting to have a huge hereditary wealthy class.
Precisely. Right. That's why we have it, is that we're not landed gentry, and we tend not to have a system where you can pass untaxed massive estates on to your heirs.
The Duke of Dollars forever. So what would this plan do, Ben? What would happen?
It would get rid of the inheritance tax.
Period. Entirely.
Anymore. Precisely.
Wow, that sounds like a super boon for Ivanka Trump and a few other children of Donald Trump I can think of.
They would stand to benefit under it, certainly. They would have inheritance passed to them that would no longer be subject to this taxation.
That's a lot of money going right along down the family line. Let's go to the other end of the scale. For low-income Americans, what changes do you see that are important here, Ben?
Yeah, there are a couple that are important, and that clip you played from Chuck Schumer, and Democrats are going to make a lot of hay out of this idea that the bottom rate is going from 10% to 12%. But what the plan also recommends is doubling the standard deduction from $6,000 to $12,000 for individuals, $12,000 to $24,000 for people filing jointly married couples. So it would increase the amount of income that is subject to zero taxation. So it's not clear that there would actually be a tax increase on people at the bottom level. I think the amount of decrease they get will be very small, but I don't think it's necessarily a net tax increase on them. And there will also be increased child tax credit and some other provisions in there intended to make sure the burden doesn't go up on the lowest income taxpayers. So Democrats have talking points they can use there, but I think the numbers ultimately may not bear that out.
And then let's get into the middle class and what changes are most significant here or might be.
Yeah, well, there's a few. One of them is the proposal to eliminate the state and local tax deduction. So under this plan, when you file your taxes right now, you can take the taxes you paid state and local and deduct them from your federal taxes.
Yep.
That's particularly useful to those of us who live in New Jersey, New York, California, places that you pay a lot of state and local tax, and that eases your federal tax burden.
Okay.
They would get rid of that. You would have this higher individual deduction. You could use that. It would keep the mortgage interest deduction, but it's not clear that that would be very useful to people anymore. If you have this big $24,000 deduction you can take as a family, you'd have to be paying a ton of mortgage interest to make it worth itemizing.
You've got the National Association of Realtors coming out against this, saying it's a backdoor repeal of the mortgage interest deduction.
And that's precisely why they're saying that, because they're afraid that fewer people will use it, which will make buying homes less attractive, therefore maybe have a negative negative impact on home prices. So that's all possible. The other thing, obviously, for middle-class families to look at is these new tax brackets, which one you'll be in and when that tax bracket kicks in, and will your tax rate be lower than it is now? And I'd love to be able to tell your listeners what that situation is, but until we get an actual bill from the House Ways and Means Committee with income distribution tables, we just can't know that.
We heard David Wessel at the Brookings Institution, the Hutchins Center there, saying on the Morning Edition Day in NPR that the bottom line is bigger breaks for the rich. Here he was.
It's nearly impossible to see how Congress can do all that's on this list, lower the top tax rate, raise the bottom tax rate from 10% to 12%, sharply cut business taxes, eliminate the estate tax, without ending up with a bigger tax break for people at the top than the bottom.
Ben White, fair?
It's 100% fair. I don't see how you can work the numbers any other way. You can only sort of hope that in the end, as you mentioned before, the cut in the corporate rate does lead to businesses hiring and growing faster and relocating to the United States. That's based on hope more than is than evidence. And we have to remember when people make that argument that cash on hand is not really a problem for corporations now.
They're loaded. They're sitting on trillion two.
Exactly. And some of that is offshore, and this would allow a lower tax rate to bring that back. But, you know, the problem has been mostly on the demand side, that there's not enough money in people's pockets to buy goods and services, and so companies are not producing them and don't need as many workers to do it. It's not clear that you put more cash in companies' hands by cutting their rate that they'll then turn around and build factories and hire people. Maybe they will. Maybe there'll be some impact there and some faster economic growth that will lead to this middle class miracle, but there's no empirical evidence that I'm aware of that makes that any kind of guarantee.
Ben, in very brief, the deficit, does it, what happens here? I mean, this is going to cost a lot of money in terms of revenue that won't come in. Is there enough room for growth to offset that, or do we increase the deficit? You got 15 seconds.
We're going to increase the deficit. The growth won't be fast enough, and that's just simple math.
All right. There's a lot on the table. Ben White, you're terrific to help us put it there. I really appreciate you joining us today. Ben White, Chief Economic Correspondent for Politico. Read his The Morning Money. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about the Republican tax plan framework, as they're calling it, and where it would put the burden and benefits of American taxation. You can join us this hour. What are you hearing in the broad strokes laid out so far? Who do you trust here? Who do you believe? Does it make sense to you to raise the tax rate on the lowest income taxpayers, lower it for the highest earners? And what about all the details in between? And what about the deficit on the other side of all this? Will $1.5 or $2 trillion in tax cuts supercharge growth to make up for that lost revenue? Where do you see this taking the country in terms of burden sharing? The president making a lot yesterday in Indianapolis of the opportunity for growth here. Here he was.
We're going to cut taxes for the middle class, make the tax code simpler and more fair for everyday Americans, and we are going to bring back the jobs and wealth that have left our country, and most people thought left our country for good.
No, not for good, says the president. They'll come back if we do this. It's a middle-class miracle coming, and middle-class, he says, tax cuts.
We will cut taxes tremendously for the middle class, not just a little bit, but tremendously. That includes nearly doubling the standard deduction that most families take on their taxes and increasing the child tax credit.
But you've got to pay a lot of attention to the details. Democrats argued those right away. Here was Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, Senate Finance Committee's top Democrat, saying that doubling the standard deduction only looks good on paper because you have to factor in losing exemptions.
What a family of four would gain with respect to an extra $12,000 in standard deductions, they simultaneously lose more than $16,000 in personal and dependent exemptions. Folks, That is a net tax increase.
Okay, maybe you follow that very clearly. Maybe your eyes glaze over, but this stuff matters and it sets the framework for our national life. Well, let's dive on in. With us right now from Washington, Brian Riedel. He's Senior Fellow in Budget, Tax, and Economics at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research, Free Market Think Tank. Brian, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, glad to be here. Thank you.
Former Chief Economist there for Republican Ohio Senator Rob Portman. And from Washington, Matthew Gardner joins us, Senior Fellow and Tax Expert at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. They look at the effects of federal, state, and local tax policies. Matthew Gardner, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Brian Riedel, 30,000 feet. We'll dive in. But top line, how do you see this this framework? How's it look to you?
It's a good start, but it needs work. I think on the individual side, the main effects are going to be simplification. I don't see major tax distributional issues or major changes, other than probably the estate tax at the top would be the big one. There'll be some tweaks distributionally, but the main effect on the individual side is simplification. The most important part is the corporate side. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world statutorily. If you go by what businesses actually pay, it's about the third or fourth highest in the OECD. Really hard for our businesses to compete with a completely outdated corporate tax code. And so I think we can, you know, get the corporate tax improved. I will add that, you know, while people will say the corporate tax policies are just a boon to CEOs, the lower corporate tax rates have been endorsed by Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and 33 of the 35 OECD nations. So really, this is more bipartisan, I think, than sometimes it's portrayed on that side.
And elaborate on that. That is important because this, I guess, is where President Trump likes to talk about the middle class miracle. Lower those taxes on corporations, and he says they're going to come home, they're going to create better jobs, you're going to have higher wages, and not so much in the tax code itself, but in the economic knock-on effect. He's suggesting that's where the miracle comes.
Miracle is a strong word. I wouldn't endorse President Trump's rhetoric. I will say we've had the worst economic recovery since the 1940s. Productivity has only grown 1% for the last 5 years per year. Median income has barely moved in 10 years. You know, we can do better. And I think part of the problem, economists on the left and right agree, is that our corporate tax code hasn't been updated in 55 years. And it is a global outlier. We're one of the only countries that double taxes multinationals by making them pay large taxes to two countries. We have a corporate tax rate that's nearly twice as high as our competitors. It's really hard to ask our multinationals to compete with a corporate tax code that charges nearly twice as much as our competitors. And that's why, like I said, even President Obama and President Clinton said cut corporate tax rates. And even Europe, which isn't exactly friendly to big business,
yeah,
said we need to compete for global capital investment and jobs, and you can't do that with such a high rate. The important thing is to offset it, and that's what I would like to see more of. I would like to see more of this paid for.
I mean, we've had maybe productivity issues, but the longest economic growth sustained in a long time. Elaborate on that just a little more. I mean, the payoff here, because if we cut those corporate taxes, of course, very few actually pay that high rate. But that's income that's not there in the federal kitty to deal with all the expenses of running this country, and deficit has been an issue. I mean, if it doesn't produce an economic miracle or some kind of boom, then what's the net advantage to the country as a whole?
Well, the point is to help the economy grow. I mean, obviously, if the economy doesn't grow, then the policy has failed. But the basic assumption that I think most economists agree is that the corporate tax code is a major problem right now. The rate is too high. There's too many loopholes. And that if you level the playing field for our businesses relative to other countries, and also, you know, the other problem with our tax code right now is you have a high corporate rate, but it actually doesn't raise a lot of money. You know, only 9% of our revenue comes from corporate taxes because there's so many loopholes and deductions. So you don't want it to be a situation where everyone starts out at a high rate, and then if you're politically connected, you can lower it. I think it's better to have a lower rate for everybody, but less of the loopholes that lead to those terrible headlines of a certain Fortune 500 company not paying taxes. I think you can actually have a more fair corporate tax code and level the playing field. I will say, in terms of the budget, I think first as background, The Congressional Budget Office tells us that our long-term budget problems are entirely driven by entitlement spending. Revenues are growing faster than the economy and will indefinitely. And so ultimately, we have a spending problem. But that said, I will agree that it doesn't mean that we can afford large tax cuts. And that's why I would like to see this plan fully paid for, if possible, by getting rid of those tax loopholes I discussed so that we can at least make it revenue neutral.
Brian Riedel, stand by. Matthew Gardner, dive in here. Give us your big take on this tax change framework. Lots of details still missing. We know that, and they're important. But as you look at it today with us, Matthew, what do you see?
Well, I see pretty much the same gaping holes where the substance of the plan ought to be that we've seen over the past year. This framework, both on the individual side and critically on the corporate side, is answering all the easy questions about how far to cut the corporate tax rate, what to do with pass-through businesses, and what to do with the individual tax rates, but is pretty much avoiding the hard questions of how to pay for it. And at a time when we face fiscal challenges, when really the main struggle is how to pay for everything from hurricane relief to transportation infrastructure, the emphasis really needs to be on not cutting taxes more, not simply cutting taxes. We need to reform taxes. So what I see here, as in prior iterations of the Trump tax plan, is a big tax cut, not a big tax reform.
I mean, the president himself has used is starting to use the phrase tax cut more than reform here. What about the distributional side of this? Brian sees not much change, that in other words, rich, poor, and in between would pay about what they pay now. Do you see that, Matthew, or something else?
The first thing I see when I look at this plan, because you're leading with the corporate tax, because you're leading with estate tax repeal, AMT repeal, these are all tax changes that are going to disproportionately benefit the best off Americans. So I think it would be hard to avoid characterizing this tax outline as a big tax cut at the top. At the bottom of the income distribution, pretty clearly you're doing nothing. There's just not much in here, if anything, that's going to benefit low-income working families. And in the middle class, I think it depends on the details, but as I think Ben alluded to, what this plan is giving in the form of a higher standard deduction, it's also taking away by taking away personal exemptions, by hiking the bottom tax rate. So middle-income families, it's going to depend on family size. It's going to depend on a lot of things. But certainly there are no substantial tax cuts for the middle class. And a thing that certainly can't be true is what the president's economic advisor said yesterday. Gary Cohn said, I think, that the tax plan is purely aimed at middle-class families. And that just can't be the case.
If there's a big tax cut at the top, and it's not clear if there's anything for the bottom and not on the middle class, then I guess your justification, unless it's just a philosophical thing that we want people to pay less taxes or rich people to pay less in taxes, then your justification would be this is going to rev up the economy in a way that's going to help everyone. What do you make? That's the president's argument. What do you say to that, Matthew?
The problem with relying on big tax cuts as a tool for economic growth right now is twofold. One is that the economy is actually growing at a pretty good pace. Corporate profits are healthy. Corporate ability to invest in infrastructure and create jobs is pretty healthy.
I mean, it's not the kind of growth that Donald Trump talked about on the campaign trail.
Right.
It's not 3%, 4%, you know, 5%. It's not the kind of growth that's going to offset those big out-year deficits that Brian Riedel looks at.
Right. This is true. The scale of economic growth that the administration has promised would come from these tax cuts is pretty unprecedented and hard to believe. A second problem is that there's just no historical precedent for the idea that economic growth can be driven in a big way by tax changes, especially tax changes at the top. It's been tried before, and the main impact you see is growing deficits, growing debt. And there's a long-run concern, which is that if this turns out the way it's shaping up to be right now. You know, we estimated earlier this year that the 10-year cost of the Trump plan would be $5 trillion. If it turns out that Congress ultimately abandons the project of reform and just enacts another big tax cut, two things are going to happen. One is that fiscal sanity will likely prevail in the long run. We'll end up fighting over how to undo these tax cuts over the next decade, as we did with the Bush tax cuts back in the 2000s. The other is that if these tax cuts remain in place, the deficit, the debt, the mismatch between revenue and spending that is driving our long-term budget problems will force some really lousy choices. Either we're going to hike taxes on other people, most likely middle-income families and maybe small businesses, or we're going to start making cuts on the spending side that people don't support. Either way, the impact on the economy of those changes is not going to be positive.
Matthew Gardner, stand by if you would. We're looking at the Republican tax framework. Matthew Gardner, Brian Riedel are with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Matthew, Brian, I want to get our callers in. They've been patiently waiting. Josh in Burlington, Vermont. Josh, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, longtime listener. I'm 30 years old, construction worker, don't have a college education.
Okay.
Made $52,000 on my W-2.
All right.
Paid $21,000 in taxes last year. Social Security, Medicaid, ended up being 18%. I mean, it's a little ridiculous. Claim zero. Just built a house. I mean, it's a little out of control.
What's 18%? 21,000 is more than 18% of 52K.
Well, no, that's Social Security, Medicaid.
Oh, I see that stuff.
For my income tax, it was 18% of the 21,000.
Yeah.
And if you want the economy to grow, you need corporations to do profit sharing. Give them huge tax breaks on 35% of profit sharing for all their employees. Because the middle class is what makes the economy go round.
So you're not buying that it's enough just to cut the corporate tax rate. You want them to then also share those profits. Because, of course, it's a small portion of Americans who own stock who would benefit directly if their stock goes up. You want actually profit sharing, Josh.
Profit sharing. So then, because the middle class spends every nickel that they get and nobody has any retirement or anything these days.
Yeah.
So if you want corporations to get big tax cuts and tax breaks and pay less in taxes, then they need to put all that cash back in the pockets of their workers, not through dividends.
Josh, I really appreciate your call, and good luck to you there. Brian, what do you say? I mean, 52K on the W-2 and 21,000, as Brian totes it up, in taxes.
That is certainly an outlier. If you just and this is, gets into the progressivity issue, one of the challenges people face when we say that we need to disproportionately make sure that tax cuts are go to the bottom is on average the bottom 50% pays zero income tax right now. In fact, the average family in the bottom half of the income distribution pays a negative income tax. They get money back from the government.
Is that just because the distribution's so lousy that they make almost nothing?
No, it's not. In fact,
what's the average income of those people?
It's
not Brian. It's not somebody making 52K.
No, right now, basically, the average family that makes about $45,000 or below pays a negative income tax in America right now. 88% of all income taxes are paid by the top 20% of earners, and approximately 100% are paid by the top 40 to 50%. And so, and that's just income taxes. That doesn't count payroll taxes, which are spread more equitably, obviously. But when you're writing tax policy and people say, well, the people at the bottom aren't getting a big income tax cut, well, I mean, most people at the bottom don't have an income tax burden to start with. And so it's really hard to cut income taxes for people who, on average, have no income tax burden to start with.
Of course, our Vermont caller feels like he's paying plenty.
Yes.
Matthew, what about the flow-through effect of cutting those corporate tax rates? Again, that's central to the president's argument, but our caller's not buying it.
Well, there's a couple of difficulties here, and your caller raises a couple of good points.
Josh, that's right.
One is that there's no evidence from past corporate tax breaks, like the repatriation holiday 10 years ago. Every time we try to tell corporations what they ought to do with tax cuts when they give them to you, it's an utter failure. You can't make them spend the money in certain ways. The important point, though, I think, is that there are, in fact, direct ways in which tax relief could be targeted to middle-income families like your Vermont caller. The Earned Income Tax Credit, the Child Tax Credit are tax credits exactly designed for low and middle-income working families. Expanding those could be a sensible strategy. This plan does not do that. There's a much broader issue about who pays now and who doesn't pay. I think it's the takeaway is just that the federal income tax, which Brian was discussing, is one part of our federal tax system.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Republican tax plan, or framework as they're calling it, and where it would put the burden and benefits of American taxation. Matthew Gardner is with us from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy in Washington. Brian Riedel is here from the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research, former chief economist for Ohio Republican Senator Rob Portman. Sahil Kapoor joins us in just a moment from Bloomberg News to look at what the prospects for this plan, as much as we know about it, are on Capitol Hill right now. Let's go right to calls. Jeff in Norton, Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. It's not surprising that out of the mouth of Donald Trump, more lies about whatever he proposes comes. This is just like Trump University. It's a lie. It's not going to help the middle class. They're going to take away the state and local tax deduction and increase the federal tax deduction, but it won't cover the whole nine yards. It's my feeling. First of all, let me say I'm a retired Teamster. I'm 67 years old.
Okay.
It's my feeling if you want to help people in the middle class or people trying to get in the middle class, reduce the percentage of tax on wage income, increase the percentage of tax on investment income, not in an egregious way, but at least reduce the tax on wage income. Also, one of your guests suggested increasing the earned tax income credit and the earned child, the child income credit.
Yeah.
I think that they ought to be increased in a magnificent way.
Jeff, let me ask you, what about the point, and I want to ask you this, that as Brian was pointing out, upper-income Americans pay a huge portion of the country's, you know, overall tax burden already. Now, I'm not saying that it's not the right proportion, but it's a lot, you know, so should they pay more?
Every study since Ronald Reagan was elected, if you look at the distribution of income and who's benefited in America, it has been the people of means.
Well, that's for sure.
I think that the people, I could be wrong about this, but I understand that if you make $100,000, it's the same tax rate if you make $100,000 or $1 billion. In between those two tax rates.
Yeah.
Now they're going to reduce the tax rate on the upper income people from 39% to 35%.
Yeah.
I think that there ought to be all kinds of increments of increase at that level. I will say that
that's interesting when we have such sharp income pillars there so high.
I think that the corporate tax rate ought to be reduced, and like your guest from the Manhattan Institute said, it ought to be. All the loopholes ought to be eliminated. However, my problem has always been you can't force corporations. What kind of a benefit is going to be happening to the people in the middle class? And by the way, my last point, increasing the tax at the bottom end of the scale, this is outrageous. But what do you expect from Trump and the Republicans?
Jeff, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. I mean, it's true, corporations are sitting on a huge pile of cash right now, so I don't know how that figures in, but let's Carla in Kent, Ohio. Carla, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I agree with this little last caller that this tax cut proposal is outrageous because it cuts the top rate again, and those people are paying fewer taxes than they ever have in the history of this country.
That's not true.
Well, they have the audacity to actually raise the tax rate on the lowest income people. And one of your guests there was mentioning that people in my income, I'm a senior citizen, I live on a pension and Social Security.
Okay.
My income is less than $34,000 a year, and I do pay taxes. So that's one point.
Yep.
So it's not that I'm getting a handout. It's mostly geared toward people with children, not single individuals.
What about the inheritance tax? Should that go away, Carla?
I'm sorry?
The inheritance tax. So that if you've got $1 billion, you can just hand it to your kids. Here you go, kids.
The inheritance tax, the Republicans love to call it the death tax. That is really outrageous to get rid of that. I mean, it's $11 million that you can pass on without paying any tax.
Now, but under this plan, it would be everything. Everything.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump would have a huge windfall from getting rid of the inheritance tax, right? Yeah. And here is a man who says he hasn't paid taxes for 18 years at all. So this would be a way to recoup some of that money that we lost on Donald Trump when he didn't pay taxes for 20
years. Carla, one more. I'm going to take it to Capitol Hill and Sal Kapoor. William in Nashville. William, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My point is that the tax system, I think, is actually unfair on the wealthy. One of your speakers used the word progressive. I would delete it and put unfair. I know of two ways of treating people fairly. One is the same. One person, one vote, for example, doesn't matter how much money you make. Another is by percentage. So you say, okay, you get the same benefits from the government, the streets, the schools, the military, everything, and then we'll tax you at 10%. If you make $100, you pay $10. A guy makes $1,000, he pays $100 in taxes, as much as you earn.
So no matter how rich people are, you'd like them to pay taxes at the same rate as the poorest American, let's say, or middle
same
class.
Same rate by percentage, so they're absolutely treated fairly. Same way I treat my daughters. They're different ages, but I'm not going to unduly treat one differently from the other and make one have a huge burden compared to the other. I just don't think it's fair.
But then, you know, when the income is distributed so unequally in this country, William, you're going to turn around and put all more of the weight of, you know, paying for the government on those who have very little to spare in the middle or low end?
Well, I think the question is an interesting one, because I think the answer to that is no, but it's because it's not the weight of the government. It's the weight of the payouts to people. 60% of the cost of the government is money going to people who are on the bottom.
Well, yeah, but then, I mean, you know, we just heard from Carla, you know, she's living on a pension plus Social Security. $34,000, that's not a lot of money. But we take your point, William, and I appreciate your call. Sal Kapoor joins us right now from Bloomberg News, national political reporter there, looking at the political prospects for this package. Sal, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be back, Tom.
So we've seen the trouble that Donald Trump and the Republicans have run into on health care and more. What about this tax plan and the political dynamic around it on Capitol Hill?
Tom, this is the Republicans' last big chance to get something done this year before they go home for Christmas, something that they can tell their constituents they achieved. And this is something, tax cuts is something that has united Republicans for a very long time. The early reviews of this framework from Republicans are largely positive, including the hard right members who tend to give the party leaders the most amount of trouble. They had been holding up a budget resolution, which is a vehicle to move this in Congress, and they have since dropped that objection. So
the Freedom Caucus, which has been so up in arms about deficits for years under Obama and more, they're not going to complain about these deficits?
Well, they are on the verge of pulling a massive 180 on the issue of debt and deficits. They did complain about it. You're absolutely right, under President Obama, pretty much throughout his presidency. But Republicans have tended to be less concerned about deficits when they're in power and they have the ability to lower taxes. We saw this happen under President George W. Bush. We saw this happen under President Reagan. So I think their issue with the deficits and debt, it was a little bit disingenuous. Their issue was with government spending, not so much with deficits and debt. And the committees, especially in the Senate, are paving the way to allow for a pretty significant increase to the debt, about $1.5 trillion under this tax cut, at least before macroeconomic effects are taken into account.
Does that feel ironic on Capitol Hill after all the years of talking about, you know, we can't spend this way? We can't.
Deeply, deeply ironic. But, you know, hypocrisy is probably the least fatal political sin.
What about the politics of this? Donald, the president is tweeting this morning that Democrats don't want massive tax cuts. How does that win elections? Can the president and Republicans put this to work in the upcoming elections? Because it's tax cuts. Who can be against that?
Right. So the trick is they are trying to sell this as a big tax relief for the middle class. And it's true that there are some provisions in here that would benefit the middle class, most notably doubling the standard deduction and increasing the refundable child tax credit, which they don't specify by how much.
Yeah.
But yes, those two things would certainly benefit the middle class. But there are other things that some in the middle class would lose out from, including eliminating the personal exemptions, eliminating the state and local tax deduction, which primarily benefits high-tax states like California, New York, and New Jersey. There'll be middle-income families in those states that end up losing out. One fascinating point is that
those are blue states, one should note. This would be a real whack at those blue states' status quo.
Exactly. It would harm those the most, but it's not just blue states. There would be people in some purple states as well that take advantage of the state and local deduction. Everybody gets it. It's just the higher taxes are in your state and in your localities, the more you benefit from it. Now, the notable thing here is that President Trump's economic advisor, Gary Cohn, this morning did not make a categorical promise when asked if taxes will not go up for the middle class. He said he cannot guarantee that.
Wow.
Because there could be, you know, there could be some unique families that do get higher taxes. And one possibility is, a low-income family of about $45,000 in income with a couple of children, lower middle class, they could see their taxes go up because of the elimination of personal exemptions. Meanwhile, you have a pretty significant series of cuts that would pretty clearly benefit the highest earners.
I don't know about that as a middle-class miracle. I mean, watch out, because that's where the numbers are still fuzzy, right in the middle. What about the process, Sahil? How is this going to go? Under what terms are Republicans looking to pass this, and how do you see the chances of it passing?
Right. So on the Democratic side, they are pretty clearly focusing their objections on the rate cuts and the tax cuts for the highest earners. They have some public opinion on their side. The public is not really clamoring for that sort of thing. But Republicans are planning to use the same procedure they used on health care for taxes, which bypasses the 60-vote threshold in the Senate, where they have 52 members. They believe they'll have better luck this time than they did with health care, at least because, with taxes, you're giving more than with tax reform, you're giving more than you're taking away.
With tax cuts, but they just would need 51 votes then. That's all, not the 60.
That's correct. They would need 50 senators, and Vice President Pence can cast the tiebreaker. The early reviews are not looking good for getting Democratic support. You have progressives, including Democratic leaders, who, as I mentioned, are objecting to the rate cuts and tax cuts for the highest earners. And you have centrists. I spoke to Senator Joe Manchin, who is up for re-election in a state President Trump won by more than 40 points. He said he is not going to support a plan that adds to the deficit. So you have off-ramps everywhere.
Sahil Kapoor, national political reporter for Bloomberg News. Thanks very much for being with us, Sahil. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Todd in Springfield, Ohio. Todd, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi. How you doing, Tom?
Pretty well. What do you know?
Well, I'm definitely one of those people that's at the highest tax rate that you could be in, where I qualify for absolutely nothing.
Okay.
But I think everybody is missing, on both sides, the point. If you want to help us fix health care, I mean, most of us, I'm not saying I wouldn't like a tax break, but what keeps me from being able to expand is unquestionably not knowing the future, when a health care is really a fourth of my profits at this point.
Wow.
And you just can't afford that. And on top of that, because the income I'm at, I pay $60,000 a year for my kids to go to school because they don't qualify for anything. So fix college. Healthcare, both sides, grow up and quit arguing about it. Most of us at this income would not complain about our taxes staying the same if they would just fix the two things that are costing us so much out of pocket that it's hard on us at this upper level of the middle class.
No, never mind everybody else, but Todd, I really appreciate your call and the way you're thinking there. Matthew, how about it? I mean, maybe we're going to get all wrapped up in taxes now, but Todd says, come on, I can afford to pay what I'm paying in taxes, but look around. It's the rest of all these issues, healthcare, education, that need addressing for us to really get in the groove here.
I think the caller's viewpoint very accurately captures the views of the public right now. you know, President Trump and Congress have a real PR problem in that they're pushing something the public does not want. Very few people think it's of primary importance to cut taxes. Even fewer think it's important to focus those tax cuts on corporations and the best off, as this plan would. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of more basic things that people are concerned about right now. Among them, the perception that the tax system, that our government is not there for middle-income people. There's a real public trust problem. And prioritizing a tax cut to the best-off in corporations, I think, would reinforce that distrust.
Brian, you hear that pushback from the field. Of course, tax cuts can be made to sound good. The president says middle-class miracle. What do you expect? You've been following this and you're thinking about the politics as well. Do you see Republicans coming out of the tussle that no doubt lies ahead with these changes?
Well, first, let me say that, of course, we should fix health care, we should fix education, and we should fix the tax code. It's not a matter of one or the other, but let's do it all.
Yeah, but, you know, of course is easy, but then Americans sit there and watch none of that happen. And
right, but it's not that we can't fix health care because we're doing taxes. I mean, they're separate questions. They're separate levels of incompetence, basically.
Great.
It's not that one prevents from the other. I will say parenthetically that a lot of the same people, since health care was brought up, a lot of the same lawmakers who are saying we can't afford a $2 trillion tax cut just signed on to a $32 trillion single-payer health care plan last
week. You're talking Bernie Sanders' move there. Okay, yeah. Okay.
So there's a little – the hypocrisy goes on both sides.
Yeah.
In terms of what's going to happen going forward, I've learned not to bet on the Republican Party passing much of anything. They seem to be the gang that can't shoot straight this year. And because they're moving through reconciliation, as was discussed earlier.
So it only has to have 51 votes.
50 in the Senate and a majority in the House.
Yeah.
Without Democrats, they're going to need it to be almost unanimous. And the fissures right now are that Senate Republicans are worried about the deficit, and House Republicans don't like a lot of the offsets, like getting rid of the state and local deduction. But those two are in conflict. You need the offsets to cut the deficit. And so it's going to be a really hard needle for the Republicans to thread.
We've got a lot of details still to come here. Keep your eye on the ball and on what you most value. You're going to have to hang on to that as we ride through the debate that is certain to come. I'm grateful to the two of you for helping us look at it. Brian Riedel with the Manhattan Institute. Thank you for joining us today, Brian.
Thank you.
And Matthew Gardner at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Matthew, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for all your calls and your comments. They're terrific, they're thoughtful, and we are grateful for them every day. Thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.